And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, we're coming on to fall real rapidly. We're almost into November, and the weather is changing. That's going to affect how we respond to everything that happens to us. Denise, are you with us tonight? Fantastic, Denise. Now, Denise, you've been in nursing for many, many years, and you and I have talked about this. We've been together, and you've seen this a long time, many, many times. Whenever we start to have the weather changes, temperature changes, barometric pressure changes, and all this stuff, activity level changes, it has a horrific effect on everybody, doesn't it?
It sure does. And, you know, we have, on the Gulf War vets, we have to be careful on chemical exposures. And that also means cleaning solutions in your house. Now, in the summer and warmer months, it may not hit you if you've, you know, got your windows open and all. But a lot of those substances, be it cleaning tile in your shower, can trigger, you know, problems. Also, you know, other cleaning supplies, bleach gives me problems. I can't use bleach. And so you have to be careful of the cleaning supplies you're using. If you're using a wood furnace, a wood fireplace, if your wood's being treated for pesticides or whatever, that's going to give you problems.
That can be a real significant problem because we got some of the wood is treated not only with creosote, but it's treated with pesticides.
Right.
And all that stuff is re-aerosized during combustion. If we don't have complete combustion, and if we don't have proper ventilation, and we've seen this over and over again, we saw this in the desert. We've seen this in all winter operations types where we had, you know, the tent heaters and all the oils and that stuff came back in.
Right. So I think in the winter months when you close up your house and you've got heating going on, there are a lot of things that not only Gulf War vets, but those that suffer chronic fatigue in the civilian life have to be concerned about.
Yeah, and fibromyalgia, which is one of the most significant findings, and again, it's a, you know, automatic service disability with fibromyalgia tape for Gulf War illness. So that
and
is
then we have to be aware of when the mold is occurring in your house. And if you have mold and then you close it up for wintertime and you're not getting circulation, you may have some sickness occur.
We've got that. And then the other thing what we've all talked about, and we've seen this before, especially in the respiratory problems, is all of the outgassing of the materials in your, again, this is coming back from cleaning compounds. But standard household items can outgas, too, or if you're working with construction materials, we got the formaldehyde, which is a total nightmare of outgassing and everything else. So all this triggers the physiological effects, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And then the other
so,
thing,
you know, the different seasons, we have to be concerned. I mean, when it's crop raising and the crops get to a certain level and you're in a rural area and they do agricultural spraying from the agricultural planes that can hit people. So these are additional things that the Gulf War vets have to be concerned about. And if you start having a changing in symptoms, you need to look around. Look at if there's been changes in your household cleaning products. If you have teenagers and they're starting to paint their nails and use fingernail polish remover.
Well, that's acetone. Acetone, that's a volatile hydrocarbon. It's a solvent. And so you'd think it's fingernail polish, but it's actually acetone. So.
Yeah. You have to also watch for perfumes. And, you know, if your house is open, you're outside, you may not be affected as much. But then we move into the winter months, and, yeah, we have a problem.
We've got all this stuff. So we've got all of these household chemicals. We've got industrial chemicals. We've got all the agricultural products. I know right now here in Illinois, and I think the same thing, harvest has been in full force for days, for weeks now. And all of this stuff, again, is airborne, and there is a tremendous amount of respiratory response, not only in the veterans here, but all over the place, because all of the corn and soybean and wheat dust, all this stuff is airborne. And, boy, you start breathing in that in with already the irritation in your respiratory system, I mean, you're going to crash and burn.
That's exactly right. And sometimes, you know, the vets have not been educated and informed about this. And so all of a sudden they're getting sicker and they're panicking. And they don't think to go through the little checklist of if you are having this all of a sudden changes. You know, you need to sit back and kind of look at your environment and see if there's something that may be triggering it. I mean, you know, here in Colorado, we're getting past the point of spraying for the beetles and the pines. But if you have the pine trees close to your house and they spray it, you may have a reaction. So we have to watch for all these kinds of things. I think we covered quite a few of them.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of looking at all this stuff. Now, the other thing, too, and both you and I have been together and we've worked with a lot of people, as the barometric pressure starts changing and the weather changes, again, we're going hot and cold. I mean, I woke up Thursday morning and I had a dentist appointment to go get my teeth cleaned, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was snowing here in Illinois. I mean, it was snowing enough, heavy snow flurries, you could see it. It wasn't sticking or anything, but the barometric pressure was changing. So now we got a tremendous temperature fluctuation. We went from, you know, 70, 80 degrees on down to 30. That barometric pressure was crashing. We had a cold, wet wind. And as you know, both, you know, I mean, you've seen me and a lot of the other ones, all of us have this incredible sensitivity to cold, which just really messes you up, much less the sensitivity to heat. So, I mean, you go either way, but the cold can really foul you up bad.
That's true. Our automatic autonomic nervous system just does not function as well with the Gulf War vets. And so that affects your nervous system and your ability for your heat to regulate itself like it normally would. You know, it can cause you havoc, much less with peripheral neuropathies that are showing up.
Yeah, on the autonomic system where we have all that, obviously we've got all the great work of Dr. Mee and Lee up in Washington, D.C., and others that have looked at the autonomic and, you know, all those different nervous systems and what the response is. And, I mean, it's scary to look at all this stuff.
Yeah, I've had many conversations lately of people wanting, you know, treatment and care. And, you know, the one thing people have to understand, first of all, we had chronic fatigue people before there was the Gulf War. We had exposures happening be it in the pesticide and the agricultural people out in California, be it the incident out in Nevada years ago that they never settled on what caused it. But we're kind of a subset now. We don't know how we're different except that Dr. Klimas in Florida, who is taking care of chronic fatigue patients and Gulf War patients, feels like the Gulf War veterans are a much sicker group of patients in her evaluation and what she's been doing for years. So, you know, they're still looking for treatment in the civilian world with civilian chronic fatigue or whatever you want to name it. There's several names that float around. And the Gulf War vets, with the denials that came from the DOD that started this whole mess of not telling the truth and owning up to it and helping us in the beginning, and then it being pushed onto the VA, and we're still in the denial and delay, you know, just like the Agent Orange and Atomic vets were. But you have to remember, number one, you've got to take care of your health. Certain things that you might do would be evaluate your diet, have fruit, avoid wheat products, you know, cut down on glutens may help your indigestion system, your GI system. There are supplements like the CoQ10 that Dr. Guillaume has shown can help us. There's other supplements out there, but it's all supplemental-based right now, diet supplemental-based, trying to keep some exercise going. What's really disheartening is there's so few treatment trials being funded for Gulf War illness. There's only been a few of them. Dr. Meggs out in East Carolina State University has one going right now. There are some fibromyalgia studies with the fibromyalgia drugs. But, you know, we have concentrated on showing the damage, and I think we've done that. It's time for the government to admit that there's neurological damage, immune system damage, endocrinology damage. And we need to move past that point of trying to prove our point on diagnostic and move to treatment. Treatment, treatment. Find some treatment for our Gulf War vets that will make their lives a better quality.
Now, one, I think it's important while we're talking about treatment for the vets, we go back to all this stuff. We have the RICO Commission report. Again, that Jim Toote, it was the subject of a movie we did called Thanks for Grateful Nation, starring Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger. All the incredible work with you know, in that movie and everything, we had Chris Hayes, Bernie Sanders, all of them were involved in this. And again, revealing the incredible, incredible deliberate sale of chemical and biologicals to Iraq and other countries prior to Operation Desert Storm, which then led into us having to absolutely, and I'm going to repeat, we had absolutely no choice. We knew that Iraq had weaponized anthrax, and we knew they had weaponized anthrax because in the Recall Commission report, which came out after the war, but we knew of at that time, very sadly, the U.S. Army absolutely sent Bacillus anthracis from Fort Detrick, Maryland to Iraq, totally documented. We had Clostridium botulinum, we had histoplasm, we had Brucella, perfringens, we had E. coli, all of this stuff.
Much so, less the endemic disease of leishmaniasis that's endemic in that area of the world.
Which has had a devastating effect, and again, we've talked about that and it's thoroughly documented.
Much less the vaccines and the PP pills that we were given. I mean, there is enough evidence. I think the government needs to come out and acknowledge finally, and not, some people say, well, we're getting our claims through, so that's an acknowledgement. No, that's not a full acknowledgement. That doesn't help the civilians know what's been going on with us for 23 years. A full and complete acknowledgement. Some media coverage of that would help. Our vets are suffering. It takes quite a while to get their claims through. With the backlog, the backlog's getting better, but then we had the shutdown, and that slowed things down. But we have vets waiting on their disability that are having to find financial assistance. Ohio is lucky enough, they have some temporary financial assistance for their vets. Not every state has that in their state veterans department. The American Legion has a temporary financial assistance based on if you have children in your home that are below the age of 18. That are living at home, and it's mainly, you know, to cover the children's needs, the food, the shelter, things like that. That is temporary assistance. They want to know that you've gone to every other source, Red Cross, Goodwill, and everything else before they, you know, acknowledge that. You have to have it started at the local and state level and approved by national. VFW has an assistant program, but right now it seems to be limited to the OIF-OEF. We have so much that's available to OIF-OEF, and looking for things just for the Gulf War in 1991, it's really horrifying that there's been an outreach so much for our current troops, OIF-OEF, and that the Gulf War vets have been left out there.
Now,
just like the
one thing, and again, we continuously get updated information and everything, and the Recall Commission report is so critically important, along with the other endemic diseases. So we had the anthrax, where we knew that was present. We had all of the other gastrointestinal diseases and illnesses, both weaponized and endemic diseases. And as a consequence, one of the, you know, we had to administer the anthrax vaccines, which have a devastating effect on everybody. And, I mean, we knew that from the get-go. It was known. It was said on the effects of the anthrax vaccine. And when you actually go into, and I want to quote this verbatim because I don't want to make an error, when I go into the physician's direct guidance for Vision 11, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, okay, and we look at the medications and everything as far as what we're going to have for anthrax, the anthrax vaccination problem, these are the signs and symptoms which are confirmed on page 16 of the physician's guidance from Vision 11 from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. Muscle and joint pain, paralysis, chronic fatigue and exhaustion, severe headaches, weight loss, chronic illness, memory problems, numbness in the legs and the hands, and spasms and tremors in the limbs, diarrhea, and cardiac. So these are the acknowledged known problems for the anthrax vaccine itself, and the doses were, as you know, were all different. I mean, I administered thousands of doses at command headquarters, our team did. And we all got the dose multiple times because of what we were involved in. But then some people got one, two, or three. It was supposed to be spread over an 18-month period, and some people had went through all the whole sequence just in a week or two. But the other thing, too, that was used for this, and I know, Denise, you were totally involved and worried about this stuff, is ciprofloxacin.
Right.
Ciprofloxacin is a medication, an antibiotic, specifically designed for these gastro, the E. coli, all of this stuff that we were nailed with that was set there in the Regal Commission report, but also ciprofloxacin is the drug of choice for respiratory anthrax. And a lot of people, I don't know if you where you were at, but people were taking Cipro. You know, a lot of people were taking Cipro as a preventative. I mean, we had the, you know, PB tablets, prednisolone bromide, you know, for the nerve agents. Again, they're still a nerve agent itself, but they locked up the synaptic junction. But with the anthrax, knowing that the U.S. Army had delivered anthrax, weaponized anthrax to Iraq, and Iraq definitely had it, would use it, no doubt about it, they started Midocipro as a preventive drug. So in other words, we've got a whole bunch of drugs being put into the body. And what has happened now, again, and this is extremely important for update, ladies and gentlemen, is on page 8 of the October 28th Army Times, there's a story by Patricia Kimmy. Thank God for Patricia. She has been doing wonderful work at Army Times. But what they are is a headline, New FDA Warnings on Cipro May Tie Into Gulf War Illness. And when we look at the actual medical stuff and everything else, what we have found out and what the warnings are, FDA, quote, FDA strengthens neuropathy warning for Cipro and all the fluoroquinolones. This is a family of drugs all related to this stuff. And so, again, we got direct adverse, possible confirmed direct adverse health effects as a consequence of taking Cipro for these medications. Now, this is new. I mean, we knew we had problems coming down with that before. But now, all of a sudden, we have a main story coming out and a warning to the veterans, direct warning to the veterans, that Cipro itself can cause the neurological problems, and not immediate, but long-term, and it can develop over a time. And as you know, when we work with this, and you had the report before, we know that the PB tablets, which are a pesticide themselves, a nerve agent themselves, that were given to Bob Lockett, you know, for you get the antidote, also cause the neurological problems. So now we have the exposures that cause all the neurological neuropathy and all the other problems, respiratory and everything else. Now we have one more piece of information confirming that the medications, prophylaxis or preventative stuff, also cause the problems.
Yeah, a lot of that comes from the fluoride molecule. And ciprofloxacin has a fluoride molecule. There's other things. So you get into fluoride-type poisoning.
Yeah, could you explain that to everybody, please?
Well, you know, you have to look at each of the drugs that was used, plus the nerve agents, and it's more detailed than I want to go into, and Bill Fuzzy and I have talked about it. He's a Marine that had a background with chemistry, and we talked about it a lot with fluoride and a buildup of fluoride in the body, and ciprofloxacin has a fluoride, you know, component. Some of the nerve agents have a fluoride component. So you have to really dig deep to find some of this. There was a lot of talk about fluoridation in the water, you know, to keep cavities down. And there's been a movement in the last 10, 15 years, I think, of removing that, because they're seeing some problems with it. So, you know, I encourage people to dig deep, look at fluoride toxicity and the symptoms that it causes. And again, it's, you know, based on the body and how it responds to that. So, you know, there are just, we found little things as we've moved along through this. And what I want to say is the VA is letting down the Gulf War vets. Although the claims are starting to move better, it depends on the region of the country you're in, I think. There's still a frustration that the vets go into their primary care at the VA and they don't know how to refer them to the war-related illness centers if they've done everything they can, and there's still questions that that is a referral consult type thing that people can be referred to. The VA has not trained all their primary care about it. It's on their own website. Give me a break. Tell the vets to go in and pull that website up for the doctor as they're sitting there and go, I want to be referred. The VA has not put out our data for over a year and a half. on how many claims have been put in for Gulf War vets, 1991, the pre-9/11, how many have, you know, got their claims through. They have not ever put out a complete listing on the deaths that have occurred, how many deaths, and what are their diagnoses, so that medical doctors can know there may be an increased risk factor for cardiac problems, for, you know, neurological problems. This is a failure of a huge level when you don't even put out that data so that it's publicly available so that doctors can know. Let's whether go, it's VA or civilian.
You know, let's go back to what you said again, the War-Related Illness and Injury and Study Center in Washington, D.C.
And D.C., Orange, New Jersey, and Palo Alto, California.
Yes.
If you're west of the Mississippi, you're going to have to get a referral out to Palo Alto, California. East of the Mississippi usually starts with Orange, New Jersey. They do a good metabolic workup there. The neurological problems are usually referred up to Dr. Lee in D.C.
Yeah, and the contact, the primary contact is Brenda.
Well, the thing is, Doug, to give their phone numbers out is not really helping. They have to get their referral
from their
primary care physician at the VA. And if they go on va.gov, type in War-Related Illness and Injury Study Centers, WRIISC, you will come to their page that says how to get your referral. And that comes from the primary care physician. Now, if you're having trouble with your primary care physician not referring you, the steps I recommend are, number one, you go to the patient advocate. You file a complaint. You make a copy of that with your letter, and you give it to the hospital administrator, the VA hospital administrator, because they need education at that center. If any one vet's having problems, there's maybe more. Then, and only after you've done everything you can then call, and those numbers are posted on the VA.gov page under War-Related Illness Centers, then you can call them and ask them for assistance in getting it done. But that is not the first step. The first step is at your local provider level.
Yeah, because the provider has on their computer access, you sit together. I know when you and I did it, is you sit down with your primary care physician at the VA, and they complete the referral documentation that then goes up through the chain to get you up to the Warren's clinic, whether it be Palo Alto or East Orange or in Washington. Now, the other thing, too, that has come up, and again, this comes back with all the claims and everything else, again, another report that came out, recent report just a few days ago, is all the burn pits are, all the claims are in limbo again on this one. And we have to understand the burn pits and all this stuff. Again, yeah, there's been a lot of talk, OIF, OEF, and everything else. But as we do know, this goes all the way back to Desert Storm. Because as you know, General Franks had our team go up and clean up the mess during Desert Storm. And then they had to set up the burn pits during Desert Storm at KKMC and other locations and also up into Iraq to get rid of all this stuff. And again, so that stuff was still happening.
I think the burn pits in the Gulf War were somewhat limited compared to OIF or OEF.
OEF, OEF, they're all over the place.
Yeah, they really
incredible.
Got heavy exposure. We have more of the oil fire exposure than the burn pits.
Yeah, but again, when we look at the oil well fires, the complex chemicals, the inorganics, organic compounds, heavy metals with the oil well fires were just devastating. So all that stuff is known, and we run into the same thing. And I think just one of the things that bothers me the most, especially when I, you know, again, reading this thing on the burn pits and everything else, coming back that are still in limbo, the medical report and the medical order for the burn pits and everything else, I'm going to pull that up so I can read that again directly, because it's all totally related to everybody, is the medical directive for this stuff was put out back in April of 2011. This, again, Department of the Army, Medical Task Force, and the whole thing. And this is directing everybody, and again, this is the same thing we have, to go to the VA for their absolute medical care. And what they're looking at is the concentrations and all this complex inorganic particulates and everything is just having tremendous effects. And I want to read this verbatim, what's on paragraph 4 here of the memorandum. Long-term health risks associated with air conditions and all the different lowens indicates there is potential long-term exposure to lead, increase the risk for developing chronic health conditions such as reduced lung function, exacerbated chronic bronchitis, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, atherosclerosis, and other cardiopulmonary diseases. And therefore, everybody was directed to go to the VA. So when we find this stuff in limbo, because we're still seeing denials even here where people I've sent them to, saying, well, there's no health effects for the burn pit. Well, that burn pit memo is out there, like the Regal Commission report is out there and all these other ones. But you, when you have to get a run into it, the VA and Department of Defense are still denying any correlation because of the incredible cost liability. And then the other thing is we've learned, horribly learned, is the actual medical capabilities to really treat this stuff.
Yeah.
It's frustrating for me beyond all comprehension, you know, because when General Franks told us to go clean this mess up, and we did, and then we all started getting sick, but then we're seeing the same problems that we thought had been resolved before in numerous hearings and numerous recommendations all the way up through the, you know, Presidential Special Oversight Board, again, and everybody else, and Rotzker and Kilpatrick, and this stuff just keeps coming around and around and around. For me, it's horribly frustrating.
Doug, I just wanted to mention that I haven't got all the obits up yet, but for October so far, and I haven't checked the last few days, but I have 28 listed as Gulf War veterans.
28?
28. You know, I've had months that are much higher than that. But this is why, you know, I'm upset with the VA, because when I have vets that are age 45, dying, another one 62 years old. I mean, these people could have lived a much longer life. I mean, some of them 62, 70. Yeah, they're older, and they may have served in Vietnam, too. But, you know, we're not getting the answers. I have one 54. Another one, you know, older one, age 80. I have one 54 again, 43, 74. You know, so we have the older and we have the younger, you know, 57 here. You know, and we're not getting data out there to the, you know, the VA doctors don't have this data available if they don't put out the statistics. The civilian doctors don't know that there should be a concern here looking at these deaths, what's causing the deaths. Is it suicides, which I don't think there's that many on the Gulf War vets, although it does occur. But is it cardiac problems? Is it stroke? Is it a pulmonary emboli? You know, this is absolutely needed. You know, this is needed. Even if you go to a civilian doctor, they're going to review your family history, your risk factors. And to not be sharing this information from the VA of the death rate, ages, what they're dying of. This to me has been a horror story since the beginning, and we don't get the data, so we can't share it with doctors. They don't have a means to get it shared even with their VA doctors.
Well, you know, I had direct contact with a person deep within the VA and a senior leadership in Washington, D.C., who told us years ago that the death data was being hidden and deliberately not reported.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no doubt about it. I mean, this guy is known as Deep Throat. He's gone to the angels by now. Very simple. But when you look at the Regal Commission report and working with Jim Tude and the Deep Throat that's in, you know, thanks for Grateful Nation, this is the individual. So that is absolute verified thing. Now, again, just on October 25th, in the last couple of days, again, Patricia Kimmy, I mean, she incredible, incredible work. Quote, report, three more VA patients die from negligence. Three more patients have died in Veterans Affairs Medical Centers as a result of negligence, the latest in a series of preventable deaths that have occurred at VA facilities nationwide. I mean, it is just, it's broken. And, you know, when we've got you know, Patricia and the other reporters, you know, and Rick May is doing such an incredible job. They're writing the reports. They're getting the information out there. And yet we're seeing nothing change. There's no accountability. This is absolutely inexcusable. We had the individual, and again, the story came out because the guy came to Danville VA, hiding out from Martinsburg, West Virginia, where they had these people dying there from the respiratory problems, respiratory contamination throughout the hospital. But then they also put another individual on the surgery table, and they misused anesthesia, and they set him on fire and burned him alive. It's absolutely inexcusable for what we keep seeing. And day after day, it's the report after report. We've got problems with medical care. We've got
anytime the Gulf War vets make headway through research, they clamp down, just like with Dr. Haley. You know, you make headway and show where the damage is, and it's like they ignore it or they shut that researcher down. And it's hurting the veterans. That's what it comes down to. It's hurting the veterans. And compensation is one thing, but having the diagnostic ability to know what's wrong with your body, what can be done to help you in your medical care.
Yeah, to make another quote here, and again, this is in our Patricia Kimmage article. It's on armytimes.com, quote, "And Representative Jeff Miller, Republican of Florida, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, has written President Obama asking him to address, quote, the management oversight and leadership failures that are pervasive throughout the department, the VA. Miller said Friday the VA must do more to safeguard its patients. Quote, like other hospital systems, VA isn't immune to human error, even fatal human error, but what the department does not seem to be immune from its meaningful accountability, Miller said. It's well past time for the department to put its employees on notice that anyone who lets patients die through cracks will be held fully responsible. And as usual, the VA did not immediately respond to the request for comments on the IG report on Memphis. What is going on here?
I don't know. I think it's a complete failure. And when you have a VA secretary come out and destroy a well-working VA Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness and go out to replace the whole committee membership.
Well, I think what happened there, I mean, it's been years now since that committee came out with their landmark report and book on the health effects and what was causing all of the medical problems of Gulf War illness, totally confirmed it. I mean, you know, this last January, we finally had the Institute of Medicine coming out and totally confirming, agreeing its mobile chemical sensitivity and all of these incredible exposures that are complex and synergistic in nature, which is what Jim Binns and that whole incredible group had told everybody years ago.
Right.
You know, but again, that report was squashed. They sent it up to the IOM and sent a report and squashed it. Doctors didn't see it. Nurses didn't see it. And
it's like we're in a constant little rat maze, you know. They send us, we go to the Hill, we get legal relief by a bill, and then they send it around the IOM rat maze. And, you know, this is just doesn't hit the normal citizen unless they have somebody that served that is not doing well that's suffering. It doesn't hit the normal citizen.
Well, the average citizen has no stake in this, not understanding. And again, that's the thing, another thing that's bothering, because I mean, this happened at the Center for Disease Control conference in the end of February, March of 1999. Andres Carnegie Bopp, God bless him, and a whole bunch of other ones, Herb was there and everybody else, you and I were there, a lot of others, totally finally tied all this together in the fact that we had an extraordinarily healthy group of individuals that got deployed over to Operation Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Desert Fox, Desert Fix, all the different phases there, and came back extraordinarily sick after just a few months from complex exposures that were synergistic in nature, where if you had the individual exposure, you might have been below what has been normally seen as a threshold for medical effects. But when you had two or three of those that were below known health effects, they were synergistic and said 1 plus 1 plus 1 wasn't 3. 1 plus 1 was 30. You know, and this is where, you know, again, I'm coming back to the, I'm quoting again from the VA, and this is just bothering me. Some things you need to know about veterans, a clinician's guide to veteran-specific issues. This is a booklet put out by the Vision 11 director for U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs confirming all of these health effects. I mean, all the way through and everything that we've seen, whether it's the anthrax vaccine, traumatic brain injuries, whether it's the Gulf War syndrome itself, where the signs and symptoms, I mean, again, they list very specifically, fatigue, skin rash, headache, muscle and joint pain, memory loss, shortness of breath, sleep disturbances, diarrhea and GI symptoms, problems in the skin and integumentary tissue, chest pains. I mean, you've seen this and argued this for a long time. The same stuff with all the DU. I mean, myself and my team and everybody else we were affected, I had, as you know, 424 people involved in friendly fire, the direct cleanup during Desert Storm, and thousands more. And the previous VA chief of staff said they were given, what, medical care to less than 100 individuals all along, and they never even done that because you and I had fought for their medical care. But what the VA acknowledges is sleep problems, mood swings, symptoms in upper and lower respiratory system, neuropsychological symptoms, including memory loss, Jesus Christ, chronic fatigue, immune dysfunction, skin rashes, unusual hair loss, aching joints, headaches, abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred vision, the menstrual disorders. I mean, gastrointestinal system between diarrhea and constipation, all the neurological, numbness in the limb, mobile chemical sensitivity, and incredible birth defects. So we're seeing this in the VA documents, physician's guidance, are acknowledging the exposures cause the medical problems. And now we got total confirmation of the medications that were provided can cause additional same medical problems. So now if you were involved with anthrax or any of this stuff, and we got Cipro, and tens of thousands end up taking for ciprofloxacin, and I did for the gastrointestinal stuff that they actually administered, and the VA administered me on as part of that study that we did some years ago. And now we're seeing the neurological, so no wonder we're having such horrific, horrific problems. And then it's tied together because all this complex exposures, household chemicals, industrial chemicals, agricultural chemicals, education stuff, and everything else is coming back on the population. And I think it was Andres or somebody else and Herb, or they all came together, and Julie and everybody was saying, well, now we know what's happening with the general public over a long-term exposure, because we had extraordinarily healthy individuals that got zapped, and now we're seeing it. Flustered. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Should we open the phone lines, Doug?
Absolutely. You know, anybody want to join our conversations? Anybody? We got a lot of people out there. Again, 888-874-4888. Again, 888-874-4888. There's another thing that's come up, and this is, I'm going to go back, and I'm not even sure how to describe this one, but it's pretty frightening. Back many years ago, the U.S. Army, along with the U.S. Air Force, and working on what they call the non-lethal technologies and everything else, we're trying to figure out what type of weapon systems could we develop and could we use that would incapacitate individuals not only in the battlefield, but incapacitate individuals that are protesting. Well, there's a whole host of different weapons. Obviously, you know, they had the beanbags and everything with shotgun and all the rubber bullets and all this other stuff. They got tear gas. It has horrific effect. But another weapon system that was developed, and this goes back a long, long time ago, is what we'll call the RF beam or the Buck Rogers ray gun. And on the RF beam weapon, again, what it is we're taking microwave beams, and this is mounted on a weapon system, and then you're beaming it at individuals, and what starts happening is just like cooking food in a microwave. You start thermal heating because you're vibrating the water molecule in the tissue, and the tissue starts heating up so the individual feels like they're on fire, literally burning and on fire. Well, we had this developed some years ago, and at one point when we were putting into the RF and the beam stuff and putting up the safety things, our team was involved in putting up the safety perimeters. But what bothers me from this is, again, in the brand, go to Army Times website, www.armytimes.com, and this is October 26th story, Army develops smaller non-lethal pain beam. And you can see it mounted on top of the vehicles and everything else. Joe Gould, who's a staff writer for the Army Times, wrote the story. And again, what we're doing is sitting everything together to where they'll go out there and they'll, you know, shoot the beam on somebody and cook them alive or start heating them up where they start getting everything down. Now, the frightening part about all this stuff, and this is what bothers me having to work and train all the police at fire and everything, in September 12th of 2006, Air Force chiefs test weapons on testy U.S. MOBs. In other words, non-lethal weapons such as high-power, quote, non-lethal weapons such as high-power microwave bases should be used on American citizens in crowd-controlled situations. What's wrong here? Are you there, Denise?
Yep. It's the military-industrial complex, I guess.
I mean, you know, it's the whole thing, but I mean, we've had all of this problem, so here we got development of a weapon system. And I have to come back and question the ethical and morality. Okay, obviously, if we go to war, and you and I have been there, and we've been around, and our families have been there, and you and I go back to Vietnam, and a lot of our friends went all the way back there, so we, you know, crossed over, and now we got the kids. Our kids were involved in the current thing. But when we're seeing protests all around the nation from things that are actively happening, and, you know, individuals have the right to protest and not break the law. I mean, that's very loud and clear, you know, and we're going to be the first to defend and uphold the laws. You and I are. I mean, we've been doing it for a long time. But we have the former Secretary of the Air Force issuing the order to use the Buck Rogers ray gun on U.S. citizens that are protesting, and they're developing new weapons, and now we come out again with a brand new story and brand new development. I mean, it's not really a new development. They're just coming out publicly and acknowledging what happened. Now, I'm going to go back when we were involved in this stuff, in the testing of all this stuff back in 2007, and this happened at Moody Air Force Base, Georgia. They cooked these airmen alive. Severe tissue damage, literally cooked them like they were cooking, a hot dog in a microwave oven. I mean, you know, we have to look at where everything is at and what we want to do. This thing is called, quote, the solid-state active denial technology and uses RF beams, millimeter waves at 95 gigahertz to create a brief but intolerable seeing sensation on the person's skin. Now, one thing that we do know from all of the RF damage and microwave damage and radar damage and the radio damage during Desert Storm, because our team, again, was involved in setting up safety perimeter security, and it happened, and it goes back to antiquity from, you know, long as radio waves and all this and radar has been around, you get incredible damage. Now, you're seeing not only the tissue damage and seeing the cellular damage, but what we're seeing and what's always been known, you're seeing genetic code damages and everything else. So now the cell is totally damaged. And this is where it all comes together. We're burning, cooking the cell alive. We've got all the complex toxic exposures, which are affecting cellular nutrition, which are affecting cellular perfusion. And now we're doing it again. I mean, at some point, the ethics and the morality have to be brought back into play. We have the same stuff. We go to Project Shed, which continues deliberate use of chemical and biological munitions on U.S. civilians and U.S. military. That started, what, World War II and continued on up to the present. We've had all of the misuse of all the immunizations and on this stuff where we didn't record it. I mean, we have to come back. I'm coming back again. This is where we tie the CIPRO together in there. We knew Iraq had weaponized anthrax at Desert Storm because it was shipped to them from Fort Detrick, Maryland. The Regal Commission report is a shipping document. You got the date, how much was shipped, when it was shipped to, from, and to who received it. It's all there. So now we have all of this stuff tied together, requiring action. We have continued to use uranium munitions all over the place. We use them in Libya. We have used them, you know, throughout the Middle East. Okay, Israel used them the first time we confirmed with them. We wrote it. They used them in the Sinai, and the stuff is littered there. You and I were both at National Academy of Sciences when a sergeant major did the confirmation of the use of DU by Israel in the Sinai. Remember that?
Oh, I remember that well.
Yeah. I mean, we had Admiral Zumwalt get up and testified, and Command Sergeant Major got up and testified. I testified. And then you, Denise Nichols, one each major U.S. Air Force retired RN, got up and tied it all together and gave him the solution to handling all Gulf War illness and now OIF, OEF illness and the Balkan syndrome, and you tied it all together there. And I remember Harold Sox and Kathy Lieberman were not happy campers with you, much less it was Mikey Nalen, I mean, and Admiral Zumwalt. Whoa! I remember the daggers flying at your face.
Yeah, I remember that well, but all I could do was get up and try to give them a solution, and they just didn't want to listen.
Yeah, but and they still don't. So we're having incredible problems. We've got about 10 minutes left. I mean, we're having a total review here of things that have happened. You've got to come back. Ladies and gentlemen, each and every story that comes out, each and every revelation we come out, whether or not it's the known health effects of the complex toxic exposures, or now the known health effects, and again, quoting the known health effects, the new warnings on ciprofloxacin, again, as an antibiotic, and this can be given to anybody. So it's not, you have to understand, it's just not the Gulf War illness or OAF or those guys or any of the military that got nailed, where we got nailed by pesticides, we got nailed by nerve agents. Absolutely did when we blew this stuff up or were deliberately used. And again, a lot of that stuff was shipped to Iraq by the United States, which, I mean, I know why it was done. It was given to Iraq to use on the Iranians and the Iraqi Kurds. And from that, we were able to write Field Manual FM8-285, because if you go to the medical manuals and you've seen this and worked with Denise, you treated patients from these manuals, it actually showed the Iranians and there was casualties in order to teach us how to treat ourselves. God, I mean, you know, what is God going to think of us? What is God going to think of us with the military now deploying the Buck Rogers ray gun and planning to use it on U.S. civilians as ordered years ago?
A good question, Doug. Lots of questions, no answers. And I just want to repeat, Secretary of the VA, the President needs to come forward and deal with Gulf War veterans from the first Gulf War. I think they've done amazing work with our post 9/11 group, but it's like the Gulf War vets have been completely neglected, ignored, and you cannot ignore any one group of veterans. And to have the medical testing that we have available and not have it implemented in VA hospitals, or at least one in each state, is beyond me. I mean, we need this help. We need the diagnostic tests that are being done, and we need to move on to how to treat this stuff.
Now, we have another problem that's developed. I'm not sure you're even aware of this because I didn't call you. It happened the other night. I was getting ready to leave for the play, and I had a crisis phone call. We had an individual, another veteran, was in a crisis mode, suicidal. They called the 1-800 number to try and get help. They dispatched the police with guns drawn, and the thing went sour as can be. And while this was happening, I got a phone call from the individuals in the apartment where it was happening, asking, screaming for help. You know, and again, what we had to do is, like you and I have done before, I made a real quick phone call to the VA chaplains, you know, and said, we need help. I mean, these are situations that have happened way too many times. I mean, you and I were directly involved. I remember one night where we worked all night long, and we finally got a team dispatched about 5:30 in the morning to save a guy's life, where he had called for help, and it all fell apart. I mean, there has to be something better. There has to be done something, and again, this is the same thing. When a vet's in crisis, we have the neural, psychological, physiological damage. We have fear. We have everything else. We have total frustration. And all this adds into the PTSD crisis mode, so where we have the thing peeing in your pants, scared, going from tranquility to sheer terror in a nanosecond, the horrors of war, which has been since antiquity. But then we've added to this incredible complex toxic exposures, and then the medications to treat this stuff that have a horrific physiological effect on neurophysiology, how the brain works, on respiratory, on cardiac, on neurology, on everything else. And then on top of that, just like with the beam weapon, now we have the crisis mode of the ethics and the morality of the guy. Wait a minute, you're telling me to do this? Wait a minute, this is wrong. And so these vets are into a crisis mode. And I'm not sure, and we go back with all the PTSD treatment, and, you know, I mean, it's come back what I hear about, what I've seen, what I've talked to people. Yeah, sometimes it'll work and sometimes it doesn't. But they're avoiding the neurophysiology and all these problems, and they're avoiding the ethical and moral dilemmas that the individual is trying to do. And so we continue on a merry path that's a nightmare. This is pretty heavy stuff, Denise.
It's been heavy for 23 years, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, when you and I first met, you had all this figured out, and all you found out from the command staff and Bowers Raiders under Andres Carnegie Bopp and Tom Little and Herb Smith is, oh, my God, the theater command staff.
And we would have never dreamed that it would have gone on 23 years without the appropriate response that we need.
Yeah, and, I mean, all those guys, you've met and talked to all of them now. I mean, you were up there at the front line right on the border, Log Base Charlie, doing medevac. And then you started meeting everybody, and everybody got together. And, I mean, there are a whole bunch of us out there that really do care and have tried to do the right. And, you know, whether you were enlisted or NCOs, it seems like we've had more NCOs, junior NCOs, have stepped up to the plate to help the vets than we've ever had any commanders.
Right.
Is that true?
Yeah. You know, we just had I'll tell you this story. I saw a posting about the Marine commander retiring and becoming involved in some other foundation. And I notified our David Winnett, since he's a Marine. And
he's one hell of a Marine.
Yes, he is. And so I notified him of this news article I found. He is trying to get in touch with the general, retired now, to get him involved. And this is what we have to do. We have to look and hunt them down, see when they retire and maybe what they've gone to do in their civilian life, and then try to hunt them down and say, hey, where have you been? Do you realize what the problems are that we're having, and we need our senior officers involved? And he is writing through the newspaper that published the story to try to get in touch with that Marine general. We definitely have tried to do everything we can possibly think of to do to get help for our veterans. And you've done a lot. I've done a lot. Paul Sullivan's done a lot. Anthony Hardy. I mean, we've had a small group that just does not give up, because this is not right to leave people hurting. It's like leaving them on the field of battle.
You know, the other thing, too, and we've done a whole show on this, and again, this is another article in the brand new Army Times, written by Andrew Tillman. This is on page 11 of the October 28th issue of Army Times, and again, this goes back to what we've talked about before, and one of the things, again, Denise, I know that is dear to your heart, court, fear of reprisal to terrorist assault reports. So federal appeals court says military women have good reason not to report sexual assault, fear of retaliation from their commanders, end quote. I mean, you've been working with women.
The Vietnam vets, I still remember, and I used this in my testimony the first time I testified with Congressman Shaves, was Vietnam vets said never again. And I said never, never, never again, and yet it continues on. I don't know what it's going to take, Doug. It seems like we need an administration with a person that really hears from all vets and what's really going on. When I can go to a GoFundMe site on the internet and see veterans, be it Vietnam, Gulf War, OIF, asking to be funded for health reasons, or it just blows my mind that we have so many needs out there that are not being met, and no one seems to have a handle on it. We have tried to speak up. I know I've tried every which way to Sunday to speak up and give them ideas of how to do it. And the bureaucracy is just, I mean, when you put a claim in and there's a need financially, we shouldn't have to be going and searching for utility financial aid by state or to have temporary financial assistance. Ohio has one. Colorado doesn't. Or go to the Legion or go to the VFW or find somebody to help you meet those financial needs before you get your claims finished up or get your Social Security disability. I mean, this is ridiculous, the amount of bureaucracy that we have to deal with, and that they're not realizing that there are people falling through the cracks left and right to the point that they're putting a femicide up. And I pulled out about, about eight of them that were Gulf War vets. And there was some from Vietnam and OIF there. And that tells me the system is broken in this country for fully taking care of our vets. They should have emergency financial assistance through the VA, not that you have to go hunt and seek to find financial assistance to pay your utilities if you have a family with kids, or to go to the food bank to try to find food to feed your family. You know, that's what makes it ends up with a homeless veteran situation.
You know, and then the other thing, too, when they submit their claims, the VA is forcing the vet to find the reports that they already have in their possession, but they don't use their own reports to award the disability for which they know it exists. Well, I think we're running out of time here. I think there's music coming up.
Okay.
Haven't heard because we're running out of time.
I think we need to devote our next, if we can get the word out to veterans to call in next week. I don't know if you have anything planned.
No, that's a good idea. Let's have veterans call in next week, ladies and gentlemen. Denise, you can get it out on Facebook and all over. 888-874-4888. Again, God bless Gary Knoll and this nation, this network, all the work everybody's doing, but we need help, and we've got to force the administration to take care of it before it turns into a disaster. Denise, thank you.
Thank
you, Doug. Take care. God bless America.
Just a little.